Welcome to the Flow Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:31 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is July 10th, and I thought I'd kick off with oil today. I drove back from Arizona Saturday and Sunday, and it was another educative trip through Midland, Texas yesterday because the place is booming. The volume of material and equipment that is transported along the freeway is really mind-boggling. You see cranes, whole houses being moved along. Well, they're not technically houses. I'm sure they're just like offices that are set up inside alongside drilling rigs. But then rigs themselves, massive boxes for sand, and it's really quite amazing. So the total volume of oil produced in the USA is likely to hit a new all-time high this year. But the volume, the number of rigs being deployed is in fact declining. So they're getting more production out of individual rigs. That's one contributing factor. But then also you have the fact that oil prices are about $77 versus this time last year where they hit 110. So the lower prices go, the less incentive there is for additional investment in new supply. So oil prices popped on the upside on Friday, tested the upper side of the range that's been developing for the last month, and then we're a little softer in here today. So there's this big interplay going on between slowing global economies and China looking like it's on the cusp of deflation versus the determination of OPEC to limit supply in order to support prices. So then it's really a question of who's going to win out. And slowing global economies, well, then that's really only a question of how long is it going to be before stimulus is actually re-implemented, and then how much of it will there be? But if we zoom out and look at the longer-term chart of oil, well, then the medium-term downtrend is still in place, and it's going to need to sustain a move above the $80 area to even approximate the region of the 200-day moving average. And it's still hovering here around the 1,000-day. So this is a very consistent decline, where we have a sequence of ranges more or less one below the last, and a little bit of dipping into the range, but nothing that is really impeding that staircase step sequence downtrend. So that's going to have to be broken in order to break the supply-dominated environment. Then when we think about what's going on in China, well, the 10-year yield is still contracting. And it's hovering here at the lower side of, or it's not really the lower side because there's a well-defined trend of compression going on, but certainly in the region of the lows from 2020 and back to 2016. And this is really at odds with everything else that we're seeing in the global bond markets. So it is worth just paying attention to the fact that Chinese government bonds have not surged in line with what we've seen in lots of other countries, and that's because they did not print the same volume of cash during the pandemic. They're not dealing with the same kind of inflation, but pork prices are starting to rise. So you have lower economic activity, lower prices out of the factory door. Some of the food prices are beginning to escalate, but you have a large number of young people that are out of work, and there is the clear intention by the central bank to try and bring down asset prices. So that's deflationary in and of itself. Then you have, over the weekend, quite a lot of speculation propagated by Russia. I think that we have to just pay attention to the fact that all of this talk around the creation of a gold-backed BRICS currency is being propagated by Russia. Now, obviously, Russia is a major economy, but it's they're also certainly still fighting in Ukraine, and the outcome of that war remains uncertain. And they have a vested interest in attempting to acquire lots of other countries and to adopt the same kind of currency management that they are beginning to suggest, which would be to create some kind of special drawing rights backed by gold rather than a gold-backed currency. Now, of course, it doesn't mean that it'd be a gold-backed ruble, but what they are suggesting is that there'd be an international currency that would be backed by gold. And the longer term, I think, attraction of that would be that it would force countries to become more fiscally and monetarily disciplined. Because if they were ill-disciplined, then their currencies would depreciate relative to gold. However, that's the longer term benefit. The shorter term would be massive dislocations and very significant depreciation of assets relative to the gold price. Now, we have a range that's been underway in gold for 3 years, and so far the price has been relatively steady, particularly over the last 6 months. And this looks like a consolidation in the region of the upper side of the range, and it has bounced from the region of the 1,000-day moving average, and that's generally consistent with a broader uptrend. Now, the next big question is, what would be the catalyst for gold to break on the upside? Well, I don't believe that it's going to be a BRICS gold-backed currency. I think that that is a longer-term potential. And it's also being formed by countries that have some form of duress right now, whether that is Russia or China, with their slowing economy, with South Africa, where there is obviously issues around electricity supply and governance. India is probably in the best position right now because they're trying to trade off the interests of those BRIC countries and allowing those interests to compete with the interests of the USA and NATO more broadly. So India is in a stronger position. There are lots of countries who would like to join the BRICS, and that is to insulate themselves from total reliance on the USA. But I think that many of those countries are probably hedging their bets. I think the most likely catalyst for a breakout in gold is going to be when the trend of positive real rates reverses. Now, it has broken on the upside over the course of the last week, and there's been a broad consolidation over the last 6 months. So now that we have even more positive real rates, then that's part of the reason why gold hasn't rallied in response to this news about Russia, because it's not an income-producing asset, and it's not so much the level of positive real rates, but rather the trend. So when this trend reverses, like it did in 2019, and then trended down from positive 1% to negative 1% over the course of the next 2 years, well, then that was a very bullish time for gold. Then the period from the middle of 2020 until now has been when gold has been ranging in a volatile manner as those real rates started to trend higher. Now we can definitely see that a base formation was put in here in 2020 through to the beginning of 2022. So that also tells us that it's not just the trend, but the reversal of the trend, of I guess the reversal of the prior trend is the primary factor that gold reacts to. And that's only one of two important factors that contribute to gold bull markets. And of course, the other is the dollar. Now, the dollar is weakening. So that is, I think, when we look at this chart, we have clear evidence now of resistance being encountered in the region of the 200-day moving average. And there is obviously the potential here that we're going to see additional downside. And that would also be a potential bullish catalyst for gold. And gold tends to do best when it is appreciating in all currencies. So against the renminbi, it's pausing here in the region of the peak from 2020, and it's a little bit overbought in the short term. And then when we look at it relative to the euro, well, prices are right in the region of 200-day moving average. Now, if the dollar is going down and the renminbi is going down, then I guess the renminbi was a little steadier, but some currency has to go up against it. Not every currency can fall as at the same pace relative to one another. So the euro is appreciating right now, and that suggests that gold is less likely to perform in euro than it is in the dollar. Then I think it's also important to highlight that Bitcoin was positive in here today, up about $400 to $600, depending on the time of day you were looking at it. And it's bouncing from the 30,000 level. This is a very orderly consolidation following the big pop on the upside towards the end of June. And it's continuing to hold the 30,000 level because there remains to be quite a lot of speculation around when we're going to see the permissioning of a Bitcoin ETF for the spot market. And I don't think that that's going to usher in the new monetary system that the Bitcoin idealists anticipate. But what it is likely to do is create demand, because as ETFs accumulate assets, then it's going to start accumulating whatever free float of Bitcoin is in the market, and then that will exacerbate the limited supply argument for Bitcoin. And that is historically one of the most important factors in supporting the price. Now, it's also, I think, rather relevant that when we look at the performance of the other crypto or the main cryptos, the majority of them are in positive territory in here today. And I think it's most important to pay attention to the larger ones. And Ethereum is coming up to test the $2,000 level. And this also looks like a broad consolidation. Excuse me, that's Ripple I just put up. And Ripple is holding a sequence of higher reaction lows, and it is one of the more favored tokens by the financial sector. So Santander, for example, is one of the big champions of Ripple, and Ethereum is coming up to test the 2000 level, and it's been consolidating above the 200-day moving average and the 1000-day moving average for the last 3 months. So this continues to look like I think, a bullish consolidation overall. Now, when we think about the miners, well, as the only source of potential supply, then they are likely to be beneficiaries. So Riot popped on the upside on Friday and then improved upon that performance in here today. So we are starting to see greater interest coming through into the crypto mining sector. And this looks like a potential recovery scenario. Now, we've got plenty of evidence here that when these smaller, more volatile instruments break out, then they have the capacity to rally very impressively. Then they also have the capacity to fall exceptionally violently. So it's certainly the kind of environment where once you get 100% advance, it's worth taking the money off the table, or at least half it off the table, and have a free ride after that. And then trailing stops become certainly the most easy way to play it. Now, when we look at what's going on in the wider market, sorry, I'm trying to remember the Vietnamese index, and it has popped on the upside here to a new recovery high in here today. So as China experiences stress, then the alternatives to China are those that benefit from a China plus type of strategy, where some manufacturing capacity and business is retained in China, but then companies look for an alternative source as well to act as a hedge or some kind of insurance. Well, then Vietnam has been the primary place to go for that, and then so has Mexico. And I did see some data today. I believe it was in John Arthur's newsletter, where exports from Mexico to the USA exceeded those from China to the USA in the last quarter, and that is the first time that's happened since China entered, or immediately after when China entered the WTO. So the Mexican ETF continues to appreciate here, but it's being driven primarily by the currency. And a lot of the companies that are listed in the Mexican index are more blue chip rather than the kind of exposure to manufacturing and to the reshoring sector that one might hope for. But certainly the country will benefit as money starts to flow in and exports increase. And that should also improve the employment situation. And there's been, I think, one of the things that most people don't really comprehend is that the flow of migrants from Mexico into the USA reversed several years ago. The vast majority of people coming through into the USA today aren't coming from Mexico, they're coming through Mexico. And many of them coming from Central America. But if there are better employment opportunities in Mexico, then that's likely to be one of the more attractive places to look for work as well. Now let's think about South Africa. We have their former head statistician talking about the merits of joining the BRICS gold-backed currency and saying that the South African rand was a much stronger currency during a period when there was a gold standard. And he didn't talk at all about the differences in governance. But the South African rand has steadied from its lows around 20. It hasn't quite yet broken the dollar sequence of higher reaction lows, but it was a little bit steadier in here today. And if we see a greater impetus behind the industrial resources and energy, well, then that should be beneficial for a major commodity exporter like South Africa. However, that is entirely dependent on what happens in China. The reason that I continue to monitor closely what's happening in China is because it's the country most likely to engage in additional new stimulus first. We've certainly seen that the oversold condition for the yen has begun to be unwound. And it's not like Japan is about to change their yield curve controlled policy. But the currency is oversold and it is beginning now to unwind that. And we are still in a situation where the Chinese are on the cusp of deflation. And the renminbi is right in the region of its lows over the course of the last 5 or 6 years. And it's also very oversold in the short term. And they haven't yet really done anything to stimulate the economy that is convincing for investors. Everyone has been conditioned to expect China to really take a double barrel shotgun to any problems that it has and fire vast number amounts of stimulus at the economy, and at the moment they're just not willing to do it. So that's certainly something that is I think we when we look at oil prices where they're locked in a range, we look at copper where the price is hovering but not really breaking out, and the LME Metals Index, which has been largely going sideways. It's like the market is holding its breath, waiting to see what happens next. And then when we think about what's happening in the USA, well, the market's also holding its breath ahead of the CPI figures. And the 10-year yield got up to 4% last week, and then is easing back from that level in here today. And then what's also interesting right now is that the NASDAQ index is going to be reweighted. And it was in positive territory in here today and recouped most of the decline and improved upon it in here today. But then Apple was down a couple of percent and it's going to lose some of its weighting. And Microsoft was also in negative territory, but well off its lows. So investors remain wedded to the idea that these companies will continue to do well in an environment where bond yields start to come back down. But you have several central bankers talking about the need for higher rates. So the trend of positive real rates is still up, and eventually that is going to hit consumer demand. And we're in an environment right now where all of the decline for Microsoft has been erased. That doesn't mean that revenue growth has suddenly picked up. So when we think about what the outlook is, well, we've already priced in a lot of the benefit from the evolution of artificial intelligence. And in 2022, Microsoft made 198 billion in revenue, and this year it's 207. So it's rising, but is it rising to justify the price earnings ratio of 34? So I think that eventually this bubbly environment will roll over, and central banks will continue raising rates until they have inflation under control. And the yield curve spread is still very inverted and still trending downwards. When that sequence of lower rally highs is broken, then that is going to be a bearish catalyst for the wider market, and at least it has been historically. So we're still in this environment where we have high valuations and relatively steady stock markets, and we have bond yields that haven't continued rising, even though inflationary pressures remain quite high. So investors are beginning to think that perhaps inflation is trending downwards, and there's no real proof to say that when inflation is trending lower, at what point will it stop trending down? Could it just continue down through 3%, 2%, 1%, and into negative territory? Because China moving into a deflationary environment suggests that they could begin to export deflationary forces. And I think that is the primary reason why tech sector stocks have been so firm, that investors are willing to bet that inflation is not going to prevail, that deflation scares are more likely in the near term, at least over the next year, and that there will be a massive monetary response to that. And that is also the reason why gold prices are steady in the region of the upper side of the range, because when that money printing starts, then gold is likely to be one of the primary beneficiaries. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.